Welcome back to Big Brave Business. I'm your host, Sarah K. Heater. Big Brave Business is a podcast where we challenge the status quo of traditional business practices. So if you're ready to challenge norms, rewrite the rules, and redefine what it means to lead with courage and integrity, then grab a notebook and let's dive in. Welcome back to Big Brave Business. I am so excited about this conversation, although it'll be interesting because there's four of us on this call right now. But I wanted to bring on my good friend and my client, Becky, who is the host of the podcast, Your Breakthrough Blueprint, and we produce it at PodVox. So we've been working together for more than a year now, which is so crazy and so fun. And also, it's been really cool because it means I've gotten to watch her business really bloom and grow. And a big part of that has been bringing her husband into the business, which I also did. So we have all four of us here to jump into a conversation about the experience of working together in business, but also just the dynamics in marriage with one partner, like starting a business that gets crazy. And particularly, we are both couples that are a man and a woman. And so there's a lot of like gender dynamics that go into all of that too. So that's what I'm excited to dig into. But I want to give you guys a chance to introduce yourselves since we don't have a formal bio introduction scenario. Let's actually start with Eric and say, you've gotten a lot of shout outs on this podcast. So just say hi and what you do.
I work with Sarah. I'm the, I guess, the chief editor of Good. All the podcasts that she produced, and chief. That's what I do. Chief. Yeah, I'm the chief. I reside over a team of one, me.
For now. And then we also have Becky and her husband, Sebastian. So tell us about you guys.
Yeah, I'm not a chief, but I'm a CEO of a marriage coaching company. I'm Becky, and trauma-informed somatic marriage coach. Run a group coaching program. It's been for women for years, and we just opened a track for men this year.
Yep, and I'm just here for the ride.
And that is actually why I thought this was such an interesting dynamic, because I feel like that's the same energy that Eric and I have about this. And specifically, I don't know, let's start there. And then I want to hear like how the situation compares to what you guys, what happened for you. But Eric, tell me from your perspective, how did you make the decision that you wanted to work with me in my business? And what did that look like?
Came at a time when you started your business like right before COVID hit, and I was working at a movie theater. I was finishing up my grad degree when everything shut down. I stopped working at the theater and I finally finished my grad degree. And then I just didn't really have a plan for after that. Everything was weird in the world at the time. And I knew I didn't really want to go back to corporate America if I had the opportunity. So when you had your thing going and you had all these different wheels turning, and I could see once everything started to pick up and you started to get more clients, I thought I could just help you out. You were thinking about hiring an editor that could work on stuff. And I thought, why not keep that money in the house instead of putting it out to somebody? So I offered to learn Audition or whatever software that I needed to learn, and it's just snowballed from there.
Yeah, and I think what was really interesting is when you first floated it by me, what if I help you? I was like, oh, we can make it a family business. And what did you say?
I was like, no, this is your thing. Like, you can do your thing. I'll just help you out. Because I didn't want to come in and not overshadow. It's really hard to overshadow Sarah in anything. But I didn't want to come in and try to make it my own. Or I wanted it to be her thing. I wanted it to be her thing that she built. If later on down the line I wanted to have something to do with it, that would be another thing. But for now, I just wanted to help her get to where she wanted to be instead of her having to figure out, like, where do I fit into this and what are my feelings on stuff. I'm like, you know what? You are the captain. You are the captain, and I'm just the guy that you tell what to do.
I'm getting us new business cards. Mine says captain and yours says chief.
Yeah. So,
Becky and Sebastian, I want to hear from you guys. How did you make the decision together that this is what made sense for you? And what does your kind of hierarchy look like?
Yeah, I'm curious what you would say to that answer.
Well, a lot of what you shared, Eric, resonates with me. I think I can trace this back to before Becky started the somatic work and the I Do Breakthrough program. She was in another, basically working for herself in sales. So she was already like in the entrepreneurial world. And she was working super hard and hustling. And she's always been a really hard worker, high achiever, and successful at whatever she's tried. But I also saw that like the return on the amount of time that she was investing didn't seem to be equal. And so, but I also, when she was doing her own healing journey while I was still resisting all of that, I just saw that really was lighting her up and that she really felt, I could just tell this stuff really puts a fire in her belly. And she just was eating it all up on all the somatic stuff, the healings, self-help for lack of better words. But she was really just like absorbing that stuff. And I was like, why don't you become some kind of coach? I remember specifically we were ice skating one day. Yeah. We were just going around in circles. And I was like, have you ever thought about just doing your own coaching business? And she was like, maybe down the line. And she wasn't like super interested, but here we are. So I'll take all the credit for, but it was what you were saying, Eric. I just wanted to support her in doing something that really lit her up and something that was really in her wheelhouse and that I already saw her doing anyways. And I was like, if there's any way to make it so that this thing is sustainable, that we can monetize it and make a business out of it so that you can do what you love doing and be investing your time in something that you actually enjoy as opposed to something that is just simply for the money, then it just felt like a win. And so it just felt, so for me, it was just like, how can I just support you in you achieving your dream and really, yeah, realizing this passion that you already have. And then when it comes to, so in regards to Becky's business, I started helping to coach one of the men's groups now. So we do that once a week, and that's been, I think we're in our second month. And that's been really awesome. But behind the scenes, I helped do the initial edit of the podcast. I know that you guys help out with that as well. But yeah, I've always been into music. And so I like know like some Logic Pro and like some like basic home studio recording stuff. So that's how I was like, yeah, I think I can help you with editing your podcast, just cutting things and splicing things and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's pretty basic what I do on that, but that's, yeah, it's just a way for me to help with that and alleviate some of the the costs associated with producing a podcast.
I'm curious about how you made the decision to expand to including the men's group, and I'm curious if that vision to have a men's group always included being run by Sebastian, or if there was a thought of having a men's group and then Sebastian, were you like, then I want to do that? Which came first, chicken or egg?
It's funny because years ago, even before I became an entrepreneur, and we worked together in a ministry, like we were college campus ministers helping kids with their spiritual life. And so we had that history, and then we became so burned out. There was a lot of unhealthy things that came to the surface in that line of work. So we weren't sure if we would ever get back into something like that, helping other people grow or develop. And when I started diving headfirst into this and I started my coaching business and we started healing, because our marriage was in a very rough spot, and when it started to heal and then go on to thrive, every now and again we'd throw it out. What if you coached the men one day and we had a men's track? It just never felt like the right timing until it was this past year on our anniversary. We were having dinner and he was talking about maybe starting his own home inspection company because he's a home inspector by trade and was contracted to do that. But I was just looking at him, and at the time I was diving deep into purpose and dharma and all of these things, and I just was like laughing, like, Sebastian, that is not your purpose in life. Like, you have such incredible gifts. Like, you don't even understand what kind of yeah, natural talents, abilities, tools you have just inside of you. I can't see that being home inspection. I'm sorry. And so we just started talking on that dinner, and we came to that idea that night of what if we did this men's program. And so it's been awesome to see the type of the quality of men that he's attracted into his program and how much he loves it and is good at it. And that's how it started.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So it sounds like the plan for a men's program always included being run by Sebastian. That was always
like plan A was the hope, right? But I also knew if that wasn't something that was going to light him up, then there's other men that I could have
called. Sure. So I know for me, one of my big concerns was that I felt like our relationship, me and Eric, was in a really good place as my company was growing. And I personally had a lot of fears about, fear is a strong word, but I had hesitations about what is this going to look like? We're such good partners in life. If we're not partners in business, if this is my business and you're working for me, what is that going to do to the dynamic of our relationship in like other aspects? Because I really treasure the fact that like we very much treat each other like equals. I feel like personally, I really feel like I have a partner in you, Eric, in the way that we move through life and the way that we make decisions. And to have a totally different dynamic in business made me really nervous. So I'm curious first, Becky, did you have any nerves or hesitation, especially like with the journey that your marriage is on? Obviously, you have tools, you're well equipped to navigate like communication and things like that. But did you have any nerves or insecurities or fears around what would happen with Sebastian entering the business officially?
Yes, all of the above. And I can't even remember if I've communicated that to Sebastian. So this is a great therapy session. Thank you. But yeah, I felt like, especially because of how much we had come back from and we had rebuilt so much and we're at such a good place, there was a fear of, oh no, what if this brings in a dynamic that adds stress again and creates rupture? And all of the things that you just named were totally going through my mind. And yet at the same time, it felt like such an intuitive yes. Everything in my body was screaming, hell yes, this is the next step. And so I was trusting that while just acknowledging all of those thoughts passing through my mind.
Yeah. I knew for sure on that note about like feeling aligned, I knew for sure that I didn't want Eric to have to get a typical day job that, to your point about all the things you said about Sebastian, like just for the sake of having the paycheck, or okay, yes, this is some way you can grow professionally, but it's not you and it's not what you were like put here to do and it's not going to fulfill you. And we've watched each other work 9 to 5s or day jobs or whatever, so to speak, in the past that were draining us and killing us. And I found this thing that really lights me up. And just the way you put it, Sebastian, of like lights a fire in my belly. Like I'm so in love with my business and I'm so in love with entrepreneurship. And I can't stand the thought of after doing this graduate degree, finishing in the midst of the COVID pandemic quarantine years and struggling through all of that, to just go get another soul sucking job to watch you do that when I know I'm so fulfilled. That's something that I knew I didn't want for you. So I liked the idea of you coming into my business for that standpoint. And I liked, obviously, the idea of not having to pay somebody externally, being able to, as you put it, I think that's like kind of our phrase, it's like keeping that money in our house. I love, of course, that idea. But Eric, did you have nerves or fears, or what was your feeling about that kind of dynamic shift?
When you first started out, or when we first started dating and everything like that, you were working like at one place and then you went to go work at another place in a kind of a similar role, but you were always bigger than those roles let you be. And so watching you take this journey, and then also you didn't even know what podcasts were before we started dating, which is really funny. And then you've grown into this. I'm like, man, That was a great idea, I guess.
You know, I was thinking that when Sebastian was like, I'm going to take the credit for the ice skating date. I was thinking Eric's going to have to take credit now, too, because he loves to say the same thing. I introduced you to podcasting, then you made a business.
She's like, what's podcast? And I'm like, well, there are these things. And then you record. And I'm like, it's really fun. And she's like, okay, I'll build a business out of this. As far as like coming into the business, I'm a pretty level kind of personality, I think. And I really try to be like supportive. When I say I'm going to be supportive, I try to be supportive. I wasn't too afraid of like changing the dynamic of our relationship because I always wanted to be somebody that another person could depend on. Sounds a little weird, sounds a little emasculating or something like that. But I always wanted to be like the Mr. French to the departed. The second in command guy was Mr. French. I always wanted to be somebody's Mr. French. That might have come from being in the military and being an enlisted guy for so long and having a bunch of officers, never really wanting to be an officer, just be a good enlisted guy. But it's fun being able to take care of problems that she needs to take care of and also learning more about the programs and stuff than even she might have known. There are times, I'm only human, there are times when I'll send her an edit and she'll look at it and she's like, this is garbage. What did you do? Did you even listen to this? And I'm like, how dare you say that about my work? I'm never doing this enough. I do get raw about that, but she's, no, you really do good work. It's just this one wasn't like quite there. I'm like, I know you need to tell me when it's not good so I can do a good job. But I just hate hearing that I didn't do a good job. So sometimes that hurts, but hurts is a strong word for it. She just says, yeah, just don't do that again. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I won't do that again. And then everything's better, so. It's not too hard for me to be that person for her because she is very supportive. Me finding different ways of making edits sound good. And even speaking of that, it's funny when I first meet the people that I'm editing podcasts for because I feel like, oh, we know each other. I've been listening to you forever. And so, Becky, this is the first time I've ever met you, but I've listened to you so many times. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know Becky. Yeah, she's great.
I didn't even think about that. That's so funny.
But yeah, that's how I feel about it. It's nice being able to take a passenger seat, not a back seat to it, but a passenger seat to watch her because she's so energetic and so motivated about her business. It's one of the two things that we talk about, the other one being Taylor, like all the time talking about her business. And being able to help her out with that, have her know that she has somebody that she can depend on, at least for this aspect of the business. And the more she throws at me, she's, I'm trying to give you not too much, but, and then I can sit here and say, I can take more if you need me to. Honestly, I just sit at home and edit. It's not a hard job. So yeah, like being supportive.
I'm glad. Sebastian, what about you in making the decision, especially knowing like it's something that you guys had discussed or it had been in the back of at least Becky's mind for a while, and then you had these thoughts and ideas about another direction that you could pursue, and Becky brings this up of, this is the time, this is where I feel like this aligns so much more with the gifts that you have. How did you feel about it? What, obviously you chose to do it, but what were the fears or hesitations or anything like that? Were you worried about what this could bring up in as far as like your relationship dynamics? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I like what Eric said about being a passenger and a supportive role. I don't get fired up by having to manage and run things. That stuff is really draining for me. I didn't want to have to be that point person for all of those things. That idea, what you were sharing, Eric, resonates with me. But I'm really good at being somebody's right-hand man. I feel like I'm good at helping share ideas and insight and being a sounding board for things, but I don't necessarily want to be running the show. And Becky was doing such a good job and she's invested, you know, so much of her time and money into basically being equipped to do that kind of work and handle that kind of load. So I was like, I don't need to do any of that stuff. I can just be whatever she needs me to be in whatever capacity that is. And if me stepping into that helps basically move this thing forward so that it continues to evolve and grow into something that is really meeting all, not just our needs, but like our dreams in terms of the type of lifestyle that we want to have and the type of impact that we're able to have and all that stuff, then I can be really whatever I need to be. I think when it can feel overwhelming or burdensome is just when it's stacked on to the things that I already have like obligations to. Like I still have my regular day job and I still have soccer coaching and my own personal interests and hobbies and stuff. So sometimes when it's like, hey, it's Tuesday night, did you get to the podcast yet? I'm like, oh crap, it's 9 o'clock and I haven't started.
That's like every Tuesday, not sometimes on a Tuesday. He surprised me. He had half of it done. And I was like, what?
What were you saying, Eric?
Sometimes Sarah will give me a workload and I won't get to it until like later at night. We stay up late. She stays up late now because I stay up late. And sometimes I'll be like, do you really need this episode today? Or can I get it to you first thing tomorrow morning? And she's like, oh, geez, here we go.
Yep.
This guy.
That actually has been an interesting dynamic for us because it was something that we really had to learn as we went, I think, because I am a type of person where I want to know when everything is due and then I'm going to make my own priorities and I'm going to get stuff done as I need to. But what I really, and so I tried at first to manage, quote unquote, you that way. And what I learned is that if I told you when something was due, I got it like at 2 a.m. that night. And so that wasn't going to work for me because then I needed to do my part with it. And so it was like, great. Now I'm in this position where I'm like, asking you for it last minute or whatever, and like nagging, which is not a dynamic that's at play in our relationship. I don't want it to be. I don't think anybody wants to feel like a nag or be nagged. That's not a good feeling. Yeah, we actually had to learn as we went of now your due dates for things are when I actually want you to do them and not when they're actually due, if that makes sense. So I assign you work, quote unquote, with a deadline that's like way before my deadline so that then when I need something, it's all already there and done. But we had to learn that. And that was an interesting challenge. And I think we're really blessed because communication is a strength in our relationship dynamic where that's what I think really connected us to begin with romantically is that we could communicate really well together. So but it is an interesting kind of thing to navigate. I'm curious too. So I obviously know you mentioned you still work your day job. I don't know what your kind of earning dynamics are, but for us, transparently, I already out-earned Eric when we both had day jobs. Although I think it was a lot closer to being comparable. I got my master's before Eric did. So it also wasn't crazy that my job paid more than your job did. But then when this business took off, like the business made, like it way out-earned what we made in our day job life, which is a huge blessing because it affected our lifestyle. It affected what we could do for our kids and everything like that. But I am curious to know to the whole peanut gallery of like, what does it bring up for you? Or like, how does it feel? Obviously, I know there's a lot of benefits to making more money. That's great. And I know that, Eric, I know you would say, I want you to make all the money. And I'm sure Sebastian feels the same way about Fecky. Yes, please make lots of money. It benefits me too. And also there, you mentioned the word emasculating, like there's an interesting kind of social expectation about gender dynamics there. And so I'm curious, like, how does it feel to be out-earned at this point significantly by a female significant other?
Yeah. I think the expectations are right that the wife or the mother is going to be the primary caregiver and run the household. And then the husband goes out and works the job and brings the money. And so it's almost, I always saw that as almost like an even exchange. It's, we have to do both. So one of us has to be, at least one of us has to be earning money, right? And then the other half has to help with, especially having two young kids. It's really expensive to send them both to daycare. And so it almost seems better financially if you don't work and you just be at home with the kids. But honestly, I feel like that was always my dream, was like to be a stay-at-home dad. Like I love being with the kids and to be having that role where I get to be their teacher in a way and their coach and just spend time with them. And Becky's great at that too. But I think that like I was saying, she's more naturally gifted at like just being such a high achiever and like being able to do all of the things required to run a business. It's hard work. It's a lot. And so I feel really grateful now that it's okay. Like for a time I was the primary breadwinner and I made okay money, but I was also just feeling so burnt out. But I've been inspecting homes for going on 8 years, mm-hmm. and the money's good when you're busy. But when you're busy, it just takes all your time. And I think what everybody wants is time. And I think that we are under this illusion that the more I work, the more money I have, which will mean that I have more time, but not always. I think we get trapped in this, the rat race of, okay, now I'm having to maintain a certain level of effort to make the money to provide the lifestyle that I want, but then you don't have the time that you want. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, what we all want is just freedom, time, not necessarily money. Money just affords us the ability to do the things that we want to do. And so for her to take on that role, I was like, oh yes, now I get to do more of what I actually want to be doing, is being at home and doing more stuff with the kids. And if I, like I was saying, if I can step into a role that allows her to continue expanding on that and taking it to the next level, then that feels like it's worth my time, because now I'm getting more of what we all ultimately want. So yeah, it wasn't, I don't know, maybe like in a social setting where it's, yeah, Becky's the one who's making more money, maybe that's a little bit of a pride thing, but not really. I'm just grateful that we can work as a team to be able to work towards the lifestyle that we both want.
What I think is really interesting, Sebastian, is that you said, and this is paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact quote, but like that it had always been in your head, this sort of dream of being a stay-at-home husband/dad. And Eric, you've said that as well. And I think that's really, I'm hearing like some of the stuff that you say, I'm like, I think you guys are alike. So that's really funny. And I'm just curious, because for me, I always dreamed of having a house husband. That's what I used to call it. Like I would love that, because I hate the managing the household part. I hate the mental load of managing the house. But it's been interesting, because you also mentioned, Sebastian, that like when you were the primary earner, it's a lot of pressure on your shoulders. It does put a lot of like the financial responsibility lies primarily with you, even if your partner is also working. And that is interesting, because as much as that was always part of my dream, was like, I want a partner who wants to be home. And don't worry, I love business. I would love to work. I also feel like what's been surprising for me is how heavy that pressure can feel to have the primary financial responsibility on my shoulders. And so you're nodding, Becky, but I'm wondering, do you relate? What has your experience been with that? It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, because he was primary earner for our whole marriage. We got married really young. I was 21, making like 20K a year. I think at that point I was like an ESL tutor. And so he's always out-earned me. And there was part of me that was like, how cool would it be if I could give him a break and be able to do that? And it felt like such an honor. And when I saw it starting to happen, I was like, oh my God, it's really happening. And seeing our revenue go up and being able to anchor and celebrate that first time of, I'm taking care of our whole family budget. Like, we don't need any money from your paycheck this month. Or Sebastian, I officially made more than you've ever made in a month. And like, for, he could have had every right to be ego hurt right in that moment. And a lot of people have actually asked me that question. How does Sebastian feel about this? Expecting him to feel some type of way. And I'm just really grateful, because he hasn't. He's just been very celebratory. And yeah, what he said, very, woo, this is great. But yes, oh my God, it was like, wait, this is what I wished for, but this is a lot of pressure. So yeah. In businesses, when you do have months that are like, whoa, that was weird, that's a dip, I would feel a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. And like, I'm going to let him down. I'm going to let, you know, our family down. The kids don't really know what's going on, but would just start to feel a lot of responsibility, fear, anxiety. And I can tend to just thinking back in months where that has happened, keep it all in my head, and it can feel very scary to bring that out there. I, like Sebastian alluded to, have been hyperachiever my whole life to the point where it was really toxic and unhealthy for a long time, got in the way of our marriage, actually. And so my default can be to hurry up and fix whatever gap there is. If the revenue isn't looking like it's going to be good that month, hurry up and hustle and make more, as opposed to, hey, can I be honest with you? Like, I'm noticing me go into hyperachiever mode, and I'm noticing the stories going through my head is, you're going to be disappointed in me if we don't hit what we intended this month. And every time I catch myself and I can actually remember to be vulnerable about that, it's so much better.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Obviously, I know quite a bit of your story because I've been editing your podcast also and like working on your podcast and just know you really well for the past year. But I relate a lot to that. And I think probably a lot of women in entrepreneurship are overachievers sometimes to the point of toxicity. So probably anyone listening can relate to that too. I think that for me also, there's an added layer of pressure with things like, oh, it would be so great if we could take this trip, or, oh, it would be so great if we could get a new living room set, or, oh, it would be so great if we could do, and it's okay. Yeah, I'm trying. Like, I really want to make that happen too. And it's weird to have that kind of sense of responsibility, I feel like, flipped on its head. I think I grew up in an environment where I had a stay-at-home mom growing up, and I was very blessed. I'm very close to my mom, I think largely as a result, but my father was the primary earner, and I know he felt that same pressure in their marriage. Yeah, I know that would be nice. I'm working as many hours as I can. I'm trying. I would also love that. But you want to be able to dream with your partner about, hey, do you think our next big investment could be this? And that's actually been an interesting thing. Eric is an ask for nothing kind of guy. He will never. So like when he does bring up something, he's, what do you think about putting it on our wish list for someday, eventually, when it makes sense that maybe we could get new living room furniture? And I'm like, no, that's a great idea. Yeah, I want to be able to dream with you about stuff like that. But there is an interesting kind of dance around like knowing that any of that stuff that we want to do or want to make happen, like the financial responsibility starts and ends with me, because this is both of our entire incomes. Like, you're not working a different job. I'm not. I have a part-time job. I teach part-time at our university, but otherwise, like, this is our income. So I'm the one who's bringing in that business, and that, I don't know, it's an interesting stress. But do you guys have questions? Is there anything you guys want to ask each other or me or no?
I'm curious, because this is something we've come across when it comes to investing in people to mentor you or coach you. Like, that has been something we've gotten better at, but initially was shell shock or a strain between us, where I saw somebody I wanted to work with, but they cost this much, right, to invest in. And Sebastian just being more leery, and it's just been an ongoing conversation that's still healing in process. You're nodding. Go for it.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. It's a really interesting question because, yeah, I think like most of the time when I make investments in stuff, I don't run any of my money stuff by Eric. Like, the money that I want to spend personally and professionally, I pretty much just spend. Like, I pay Eric what he gets paid, and then I pretty much do what I want to do with my own money, and I don't give him any grief about what he wants to do with his money. But I know what you're talking about with a sizable investment, and that is a different discussion. Yeah. So I think, depending on how you define sizable, I can only think of one time that really came up, but I'm very curious to hear what you would say about that, Eric.
I can only think of one time where she came to me and she was like, I want to do this coach. It's going to be like in the tens of thousands of dollars. And I came from a very frugal family aspect. And then
this man had a pair of sweatpants older than his oldest daughter, and our kids are grown. So like,
yeah, but now I don't have that anymore. But frugal family, we didn't spend money like that. If we did, it was like a very big deal within the family. Part of being a supportive partner in this and not necessarily dictating what she does with her money is, I think being able to ask those kind of questions. Have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? What do you expect to get out of this? If you do spend this much money, which by the way, could pay off your, like, one of our credit card bills or something like that, where is that going to put you professionally? Where is that going to put your business? And how is that going to benefit you? How are we going to get your return on investment on that? And if she can answer those questions, it's not necessarily if she can't answer those questions, then she doesn't do it. I feel comfortable saying, like, maybe that's not a good idea. Or saying, you know what, I think you should do it. I think if you think you can get a great return on investment, I think if you can get a different mindset that's going to push you to the next level of where you need to be, then let's just do it, because you got to spend money to make money sometimes. And especially with the way that we're building things, this is a very pie in the sky business where we don't have to buy a refrigerator and a stove or something like that in order to keep product or warehouse space. It's more just whatever is in my head, and then we figure it out. If that's that aspect, we're actually not spending. We're spending very little on the business comparatively to somebody opening like a hot dog stand or a brick and mortar store or something like that. So spending a little bit of money on that, on the business, I think makes sense. I think it just needs to, you just need to think it all the way through. And that's a part that I can help her out with, is maybe ask questions that she hasn't thought of. And part of that is also like listening to all the things that she says about entrepreneurship when it's not necessarily like my wheelhouse or something that I dive deep into, but listening to what she says and then spouting some of that stuff back at her when she thinks she wants to make this kind of investment.
I'm so glad you said listening, because I think that, and then also being able to repeat it back, which I think is part of listening, but I think that is really something you are so good at, because if I'm coming to you and I'm saying it in a way, I really want to do this, then there's already part of me that's struggling with, I feel like I shouldn't. And because if it was something that I was so confident in, then I would go to you and say, I'm going to do this. Here are the reasons why. And then basically be like, fight me, but for better or for worse. But I think if I'm coming to you and it's like in that specific situation where it was like, hey, this is like more money than I've ever spent on any kind of personal investment ever. What I feel like this money doesn't, it's not there, but I want to find it because I really want to do this. And you were able to ask, to your point, really good questions of like, why do you feel so drawn to doing this? Do you feel like this exists at a lower price point? What do you think, like, how would you measure the return on that investment? And then you're actually pushing me to make a good decision and to get the most out of my investment, because I'm going to approach it with, now I know how I want to measure the return. Now I know what I want to get out of it. Now I'm going to make sure I get that out of it for both of our sakes. And I think I'm really proud of us that we did that. And I say us because all of our bills still got paid and so did that coach. So like, we made it happen. And that was pretty early days in the business. So I still think back on that. I'm like, how did we do that? But we did make it happen, and we did make more than that investment back as a result of making that investment. So I feel like that was a good decision, but it was a really interesting dynamic. And I think sometimes when I make purchases or investments in business or personal stuff, there is a certain amount of, I'll call it guilt, but it's really like tiptoeing toward the corner of guilt of, should I feel guilty that I could pay Eric more, or we could spend this on shared things, and instead I'm choosing to spend this like the way that I want to spend it. And the way that I had to navigate that was sitting down and really looking at the actual work that Eric gets assigned per client, and like, how much of the total work for that client is that? What percentage of the client's account is Eric actually handling? And then, is he being paid fairly? And if he's being paid fairly, then I do feel like it's fair that the company, which is me, spends the money in the company investment that it does. But that is like an interesting thing. I'm watching the time, you guys, and I want to be respectful of everybody's time. But is there anything else that anybody's like burning to ask before I do my final question?
I was just curious, when you guys decided to transition from, okay, now this is a good time for Eric to step into working with your business, it sounds like full time, right? Because you don't have additional stuff. So So I'm still doing my thing. Essentially, I've become part-time with my day job. But yeah, I'm just curious, like, how did you guys decide, okay, this is a good time to transition?
Yeah, that's a good question. And both the time for me to transition into doing entrepreneurship full-time and the decision for Eric to enter the business full-time was more out of the product of life circumstances rather than us making like a calculated and mindful decision. I lost my job and decided to pursue entrepreneurship full-time. So that's how that happened. And then Eric finished his master's degree and it was literally like, I'm at a place where I need to hire somebody for help. You're at a place where you need to find a full-time position. So let's see. And at the beginning, I didn't have full-time work for him. So it was also like pressure's on. Now I have a little bit of pressure to put my money where my mouth is, which is if I can outsource to some of this work to Eric, can I get more clients that will make this work? And I am very lucky that yes, so far it has worked, but it definitely does contribute to the pressure of Eric's not getting on sales calls, right? That's not part, his role doesn't include bringing in new business. So that still is completely on me. Now he has offered and we have done things where it's like he could take on more work off my plate if that would free me up to get more new business, but he doesn't want to do sales calls and doesn't want to bring in new business, which is fair and allowed. But that is like the big question, right? Where it's okay, I guess what else would I need to pass off to you to get to free up myself to get more business? What do I need to do to grow the business? What would it take to offload in order to make that happen? And then is that something Eric is or is not willing to do? That's, in my opinion, that's what those conversations look like. But do you have anything?
When we were first initially started thinking about it, I was still right at the tail end of my student loans and everything like that. And it was COVID and I was living a little bit off of that. And then whatever earnings that I got from the movie theater job that I had, which was like waiting. So a lot of tips and stuff like that. It was a matter of like, I guess I need to find something to do, some kind of job so I can bring in some money. And offering to her, I was like, I could do this position for you. And just, you know, you could offload all that editing. And then from there, you could focus more on building things and getting more clients and stuff like that. Because there's like a certain limit to the amount of editing work that she can do and then the amount of like clients that she can have before she's overwhelmed. And so it's built to this point where, and now since that's what I primarily do, whenever we have those low points, Becky, that you were talking about in the business, and Sarah starts thinking like, okay, what do I need to do? And it's funny because she always goes right to, I need to find another job. And I'm like, you have three jobs as it is. Like, how are you going to find time for another job? I'm like, maybe you need to do a few more sales calls and close a few more clients. What's going on with that? She's like, yeah, maybe I do need to do that. I'm like, yes, don't need to work for another day. Don't need to do work for somebody else. I'd rather work for her. Let me make that clear. And I'm like, put more stuff on me. Give me more so that you can go do more stuff out there.
And what was interesting about that particular conversation recently too is because you were like asking me how do we get you on more sales calls? And I was like, I'm doing all these sales calls. And you're like, okay, so what's going on with the sales calls? And your background's in sales. So you were able to really lean in on my sales process and be like, what's the close rate look like? What is your process for closing? What is your like nurture sequence afterwards and your follow-up process and stuff like that? So actually then we could sit down and map out systems for managing a sales process. You just don't want to do the sales. A lot about sales.
I know sales. I was forced to be like, get good at sales. And that's something that I can contribute to her when I can ask those kind of questions and draw upon my background. Oh, and I wanted to say this, being able to offload not necessarily offload the financial responsibility, but not have to be the primary breadwinner in the house. I grew up in that at the time when you went out and you got a job and then you worked at that job. And no matter whether you liked it or not, you just did it and you made money. And I started out doing a lot of maintenance work and stuff like that until I got to a point where it just feels like you go to work and then you put a vice on your head and you just squeeze it until your head feels like it's going to pop. And then you come home and you're like, are you fulfilled? And you're like, I make money, so it's great. Let me go to my vice job again. And then I got my degree and I wanted to try and shift into something else. But then the financial crash happened, the 2008 financial crisis, and all the kind of jobs that I wanted disappeared into the nether. So basically the only thing that I could get from there was like sales jobs. And I wasn't a salesman. I'm not like that type of personality by nature. So I had to go and do something I didn't want to do, completely learn a new way of doing things. And even still doing that was still felt like putting on a vice and just slowly closing it every day and be like, I make money. So the day that Sarah came to me and said, why don't you just quit that job? You hate it. Just quit and we can figure something out. And I'm like, are you serious? Don't say things that you're not serious about. And she's, no, just do it, man. We can figure it out. And I was able to go back to school. She was still working at her other job, but we were making good enough money. And I like got the side jobs and stuff like that, that we could make it. And then when she lost her job, and I was like, why don't you just work for yourself, do your own thing. And it wasn't just me on that aspect. There was other people telling her that she could do that too. And she's, maybe I should go get another corporate job. And I'm like, maybe you should see where this entrepreneur thing, see where that takes you. It is.
To be fair, actually, I came to you and said, I can't go put myself through that again. I can't go put myself through. So I was putting in like a ton of labor into a company that basically eliminated their whole team, and they ended up like selling off that part of their business. And I was taking on everybody else's work as they all got laid off, with the promise that I was going to move on with them as one of the people in leadership. And then I lost my job too, a month before Christmas, with three kids at home with Eric in grad school. And I was like, I can't do it. I can't walk back into another interview scenario and put my best foot forward. And in a best case scenario, I get the job, and then I have to put my best foot forward every day while I try to start like getting acclimated to this new job. I can't do it. What if I just try to do this thing from home? And the same way I said to you, quit your toxic job, you were like, yes, do it. We're going to figure it out. We're going to make it work. So we've been able to be that for each other. But we have gone really long, so I want to make sure that I'm respectful of your guys' time. And I love to finish with a tradition, which is something that's making you happy right now. So as reasonably quickly as you can, all three of you, and I'll add one too, what is something that's making you happy right now?
The warm weather. I've been going out on the deck any chance I can get. If it's because I work from home, if I can do it outside, I will. I'm so happy.
That's a good one.
Let's see. I think I have to constantly remind myself of like, why am I doing this? Why am I here? And one of those things was, I love soccer. I grew up playing soccer. And so I get to coach my son's soccer team, which can feel burdensome sometimes when it's like, oh man, I got these 12 kids who don't listen. But then it's how, when I'm out there on the field and seeing them just laugh and have fun, that's, oh, this is fun. Oh yeah, this is fun. And then that makes me happy.
Mm. Those are so much better than mine. Mine's a video game. I like I'm really into playing this game called Helldivers right now. It's not like a competitive game. It's more of a collaborative game when you play it. You shoot and kill monsters like bugs and robots and stuff like that. But the community is really positive to each other. And even just jumping in with like random people, they're all very positive. And it's been a lot of fun finding a game that I could go into that doesn't, again, make me want to just put a vice on my head. I'm like, why do I even like this game? I'm like, I go into this, I'm like, it's so positive and everybody's really nice to each other and we're all cooperative with each other. That's my
cool
thing.
To get connection with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially like working from home all the time. And like my primary, like Sarah's my best friend. So whenever she's not here, I'm like, what do I do with my life? But getting a little bit of social aspect from that is nice. And it being positive.
Okay, mine's going to take like a real weird turn. Something that has been making me really happy lately is, so we eat a lot of takeout. Like it is my biggest like vice. I just always want to get takeout instead of cooking. I'm not meant to be a house manager. That's not my life. So although I don't mind cooking when I'm in the mood for it, like having to cook, I am such a rebel. Like, I'm like, no, I'm not cooking. I want to get takeout. So we have been making a really good effort actually to eat at home. But lately with takeout, my mom is a fiend for downloading apps for every restaurant there ever was. And it's really started to rub off on me because there's so many rewards programs and benefits for if you have the app and you order through the app, you end up getting free stuff. And then also capitalizing on the fact that this is also my birthday month, April. Oh, I guess it's officially May 1st when we're recording this, but It's been April. So then I also have all these birthday rewards. So like I've been eating a lot of takeout this month, of course, but so much stuff has been free or discounted and it's so fun. So I'm telling you this right now. If you guys love takeout, if you're not downloading the apps for your favorite restaurants onto your phone, you're missing out. See if they have an app because most places do at this point. And it is ridiculous because they incentivize using the app so much. They make everything free. So like literally get apps for everything, even Taco Bell. I'm telling you, get all of the apps. Yes, that's been making me happy. And like nothing justifies my decision to get takeout more than having a free stack of pancakes. I'm like, yeah, we're going to IHOP today because my meal is free. So anyways, that's been making me happy. But thank you guys so much for joining us. I think this is interesting. I was really intrigued to see insight into someone else's kind of dynamic. And actually, I feel like our dynamic's really similar. So I wonder if you're listening, does this sound really familiar to you? Do you have a similar personality type to me and Becky? Do you have a partner who sounds really similar to Sebastian and Eric? Or is it different? So tell me what you think. You can connect with us. I'll put all the links in the show notes for all of the people involved if you want to connect with anyone and ask further questions or give your input. But of course, you can find me on Instagram at Big Brave Business and at Sarah K. Heater. And I'll see you here next week. Thank you. Bye.